Blog Talk Radio.
Buenas noches, boricuas del mundo. Otro viernes, otra edición de Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show. Gracias por sintonizar y seguirnos cada viernes. Nos da mucho gusto traerles lo mejor del mundo boricua y latino en general. Yo soy Will Santiago Viera y este es su show, Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show. Muy buenas noches, boricuas del mundo. ¿Cómo están todos? Yo espero que estén muy bien. Yo aquí estoy bastante bien, ya que todo ese calentón que teníamos en Nueva York se ha ido un poco. Estamos en los 60, que es un poquito más fácil de aguantar, ¿no? Ya no tenemos que tener el aire acondicionado puesto, ni el abaniquito, ustedes saben. Tenemos calma, y eso es muy bueno. Como ustedes escucharon, este es su show, Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show, y yo soy el anfitrión Will Santiago Viera. Hoy tenemos otra vez la edición mensual que siempre tenemos de Libro Boricua del Mes, que es algo que nos trae siempre nuestro amigo, el talentoso y bien parecido Jonathan Marcantoni Rosa, que vuelve con otro libro fascinante para que nosotros nos deleitemos en leerlo. Antes de proseguir con él, quiero invitarlos a que vayan a nuestra página del show, Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show, y nos da un like. Y además de darle un like, háblele a su gente para que por favor vengan y vayan a nuestra página. Y entonces nosotros no queremos que nos siga en Black Talk Radio. Nosotros queremos que nos siga de esta manera. Si usted quiere seguir nuestro show, nosotros lo que hacemos es que le pedimos que nos mande un correo electrónico diciendo yo quiero seguir el show, y nosotros ponemos su correo electrónico en nuestra lista, y así pues cuando tenemos eventos especiales y shows especiales le mandamos esa información a ustedes. Así que por favor, si quieren que seguirnos, vayan a boricuasoftheworld@gmail.com. Eso es todo. Mándenos un correo a boricuasoftheworld@gmail.com y volvemos. También nos pueden seguir en Twitter, en boricuasotworld, boricuasotworld. Nos pueden seguir también, así que por favor vayan a esa página y síganos a nosotros, que también ahí van a tener información. Ahora sí que viene la cosa. Mi hermano talentoso y bien parecido, Jonathan Marcantoni Rosa, how are you, my brother?
Estoy muy bien, estoy muy agradecido y muy feliz de estar en el show, como siempre. Y estoy muy emocionado para presentar ese libro, pero pienso que vamos a hablar de algo diferente primero, ¿no?
Bueno, sí, porque tú sabes ya lo que está pasando con nuestro Puerto Rico y siempre queremos pues darle un seguido a eso antes de comenzar cualquier otra cosa. Y como todos saben que ya pronto probablemente vamos a tener la junta que tiene de sinónimo promesa en Puerto Rico, donde esencialmente en Puerto Rico van a ir y decir brinca, y los puertorriqueños vamos a tener que decir cómo de alto quieres que brinque, porque van a controlar todo básicamente, you know. So, sí, da un poco de risa, pero es la verdad.
Es muy democrático, ¿no?
Sí, súper democrático. So, en esencia, sí. la colonia va a ser más controlada de lo que ha estado controlada en todos estos ciento y pico de años. Así que es un problema grandísimo que nosotros tenemos, y que tenemos que todos unirnos como diáspora y como la gente de nuestro país allá mismo, Puerto Rico, y figurar que vamos hacer. What's your take on all of this, my brother?
Well, you know, I look at this junta and it feels like we're almost in a whole other era, you know, como ¿es el siglo XIX, el siglo XX o el siglo XXI? Porque la idea de que un país tan grande como los Estados Unidos puede imponer su poder sobre una isla tan pequeña como nosotros, parece como algo desde los mitos o desde los cuentos de García Márquez, pero no, es nuestra realidad. Y la cosa más fascinante es que no hay una furia global acerca de lo que está sucediendo a Puerto Rico. Es como, bueno, como en las comunidades que tú y yo pasamos tiempo dentro, como las comunidades en social media o en las ciudades como Nueva York. Sí, pero no están hablando de esa cosa en las capitales grandes como Londres o París o Moscú o sitios así. Es como Puerto Rico está solo en el mundo. Sí, y eso es lo que es más temeroso a mí.
Pero un problema que tenemos es que la prensa como NBC, CBS, ABC, they are not really talking about this. The only people who are really talking about this is the liberal press that we see on Facebook, the one that we see on social media. This is moving around in social media, but it's not moving around the normal press. You know, the newspapers don't really write about it all that much. You hardly see it on TV, on any like CNBC, which is supposed to be somewhat liberal now. Used to be a little bit more before, but you don't get to see it there. And if you see it at Fox, what you see is you're seeing them saying, yeah, it's good for Puerto Rico that happens. So, you know, we're not getting the press that we deserve so that people can be, you know, become conscious about this whole thing throughout the world. And that is a big problem.
Y es una cosa por millones y también por billones de personas hablar sobre un asunto. Pero en ese caso es solamente cientos miles de personas quienes están muy preocupados por eso. Y estás correcto que la mayoría de la prensa que recibimos, la actitud de los periodistas es que estamos recibiendo lo que merecemos. Merecemos esa cosa porque nuestros gobernadores y políticos son corruptos o cualquier cosa, pero excepto por personas como Nelson Dennis y Julio Ricardo Varela, quienes reconocen la problema de la colonia y la problema de leyes como la ley de cabotaje, nadie está hablando del papel de los Estados Unidos en nuestros problemas fiscales.
Nelson Dennis and his last article on War Against All Puerto Ricans, his page, he's talking about an international law called odious debt, which claims that it is illegal if it hurts a nation, therefore it should not be repaid. An odious debt, and Puerto Rico, according to many scholars, believe that Puerto Rico's $72 billion debt is illegal and odious, according to his article. You think that may get any kind of footing eventually?
The only way it will is if people like the resident commissioner, Pierluisi, or Representative Gutierrez, actually bring it up in the House of Representatives if they make an issue out of it. Because, you know, like we were kind of hinting at before, you have this kind of knowledge that Nelson is putting out there, and it's circling social media, but that social media community is really small. It's small and insignificant. So this article needs to get into the hands of people who are in power. And, I just want to say, I've seen on social media there are some of these Puerto Rican activists who bash a person like Lin-Manuel Miranda for speaking out on television and in front of Congress about Puerto Rico's issues because they say, oh, he doesn't go far enough. But you know what? He's actually taking this issue outside of the realm of the social media bubble and applying it to the real world. He understands that you have to go to the people in power. And so I really hope that Nelson's article can reach those eyes in Washington.
Yeah. My issue with all of this, Jonathan, is that to me, in order to really get at Congress, the Puerto Rico's government needs to become aggressive, and they need to unite. All three parties need to unite. And they need to say, we're holding together. We're not going to pay the debt. You're not going to get a junta in this island. And we're going to run our own our own government. And you can't come in here. You're not welcome here. They're not saying anything. You have so many different entities talking about this and talking about that, but they're not really uniting and saying no to the junta. That's one of the reasons that people get angry, because these politicians are soft, you know, speaking softly. You know, you can speak softly and carry a big stick, but these guys are not even doing that, you know?
No, it's in very typical Puerto Rican governing fashion. The only person outside of the third party is because, you know, the PPT and PIP, you know, their candidates have spoken out against La Junta. Whereas, you know, PPD and PNP, they're, you know, kind of, well, PNP is all for it. PPD is kind of wishy-washy on it, except for Aníbal Acevedo Vila, a politician who no longer matters. He's the most vocal popularity against the junta, and it doesn't matter whatsoever. And that's so, but it's so sad though that the only leader from really the two main parties, the only leader who's come out and said, "Hey, this is wrong," has been a man who has no position of authority.
Yeah, you know, that's unfortunately, that has been the story of Puerto Rico.
Yes.
You know, you have many people with big opinions. Some just have opinions and don't, even if they're in power, they can't do a damn thing about it because either their hands are tied or they're afraid to move. Or you have the people who have been in government or powered some way or another in the island, and they're talking big talk, but there's not much that they can do. I mean, I think that everyone has a role in this, you know, everyone, and including the politicians that were there before. And that is to speak out, you know, and to join the movement. You know, if a politician that was a member of the Senate 20 years ago speaks out, you know, the press is going to go, you know, they're going to gravitate to him because he used to be an elected official. So that can create a little power. But the idea is that they not only have to speak, they also have to join the movement. And many of these guys just like to sit back from their throne, you know, and speak up, but not do much more than that. So, unfortunately, eso es lo que está pasando.
Yeah.
It's incredible. The odious dead thing, though, I like someone to follow up on this, and I guess, you know, see if somehow we can get something moving with that. If you haven't read the latest article from War Against Puerto Ricans, Nelson Dennis's War Against All Puerto Ricans page, go there and read that article. It speaks about the odious debt, international law, and how it could be used to not have to pay the debt of Puerto Rico. You were saying again?
No. Well, what I was going to say is that, you know, speaking of action, because there is something that every listener to the show can do, is something that I'm going to do after I get off of the show. Representative Luis Gutierrez, his email is public. You can find it very easily. Just Google mm-hmm. it and send him the link to Nelson's article. Send it to him. Because, I mean, one person does it, you know, it'll probably end up in his spam folder. But if hundreds of people do it, if thousands of people do it, you know, and I know your show has a really large audience. So we get thousands of people to flood this man's email with this article and push him to bring it up on the floor of the House. It might just lead to a grandstanding moment, but it would be media exposure, major media exposure this argument.
I'm going to put the link on our pages as soon as we end the show, so that all you need to do is go grab that address, put it on your email, and send it to him. Okay?
Yes.
So, you know, so let's just be proactive on this, man. You know, please, if you're listening
absolutely.
To the show. But not only do you do that, but you tell your friends and your family to do the same. Because we really need to put the pressure, folks. You know, if we don't, Puerto Rico is in for 30, 40 years of this crap. You know, so not only our family, but the children of our family and the children of that family are going to be suffering the consequences of this crap that is, because that's exactly what it is, this crap that they want to do to Puerto Rico. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
Ya lo saben. I'm going to put that link in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying?
No, yes. I was going to transition to our book, because our book actually ties very well into this conversation.
Yeah. So, ladies, folks, today we have a great book. I don't usually hear about the book, but I was giving a little notice on what Jonathan was going to, what book he was going to talk about, and it's a great book. So, Jonathan, brother, take it over.
Okay, so, you know, as we're sitting here, we're talking about proactive protest. You know, not just going out into a street for an hour and waving slogans and signs or posting things on social media, but actually doing something that could have a real effect. You know, actually speaking to the halls of power. This subject is not something that's new. It goes back many decades in the fight for equal rights in Puerto Rico and for autodetermination, for independence. And the book that I'm going over today, and actually the segment I'm going to read from it, talks about this very subject. It talks about the frustration of young independentistas at their leaders doing nothing more than lip service, doing nothing more than protesting in public. You know, and their desire to do something more than just talk. Now, in this particular instance, that desire to make a big statement and to do something substantial led to tragedy, and it's a tragedy that we all know, or anybody who lived in the late 1970s, early 1980s, known as the Sergio Maravilla murders. The Sergio Maravilla case was, it sounds very simple, but this ended up blowing up into a nine-year series of investigations, both local and federal investigations, of indictment after indictment, and even after the perpetrators were finally convicted, there were still tribunals on it for another.
There was even a movie made of it.
And unfortunately, it was a really horrible movie. It's a very terrible movie. They ended up, well, I think it was they made a white character the main character or something, which made no sense whatsoever. But the Sergio Maravilla murders, for those of you who don't know, it was that two independentistas, one of whom was only 15 years old. So you're talking a child, you know, one was 15 years old, the other was 25 years old. But these two independentistas were going to sabotage a radio tower. They were going to blow it up. And they were accompanied by who they thought was another independentista, and it was actually a guy whose reputation was as an extremist. He was an overzealous independentista, which later on, some of the people who knew him were like, ah, we should have suspected him. He was so over the top. Mm. But at the time, he didn't attract any attention from them, as being suspicious, I mean. Well, he was an undercover cop named Gonzalez Malave. And, oh, I'm sorry, Malave Gonzalez. I got his name switched up. He was an undercover police officer. He had led this group of independentistas, college-age independentistas, to do several acts of sabotage previously, but all of them failed. And what he was doing was he was trying to set up these people to get arrested later on by getting them to almost commit crimes. And he set up this, well, it would turn out to be an ambush at the radio towers in Cerro Maravilla, where he brought these two independentistas, and he actually tried to get more. He was actually going to bring another two independentistas, both of whom declined to go with him. But he brought these two guys to there, and nine other cops came out of the woods, and they made them get down on their knees, and they executed them. Well, they beat them, and then they executed them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the aftermath, the police officer's story was that the independentistas had been armed and that it was a gunfight. You know, and they had acted in self-defense and they were heroes. However, none of them could keep their story straight. So very quickly it unraveled that they were lying. This case ended up bringing in the FBI, who also tried to cover it up. There was substantial evidence, and actually more files were released in 2005 revealing that the governor of Puerto Rico at the time knew full well that this was a murder and covered it up.
Mm-hmm.
That people very high ranking in the FBI knew it was a murder and covered it up. So the best account of this story that has been written was written by a man named Manuel Suarez, better known as Manny. He used to work for the San Juan Star, which some of our listeners might remember. It was the only, it was the first English language newspaper in Puerto Rico, and he was a part of a team of journalists who worked diligently at uncovering the truth of this story. And really, they spearheaded the investigation in the public realm of what was going on and what really happened. So his book, which was originally written in English, was called Two Lynchings in Cerro Maravilla, the Police Assassinations in Puerto Rico and the Federal Government Cover-Up. Now, the book was published by the Instituto de Cultura, and the copy that I have, which I will be sharing with you, is actually the Spanish version, which was released several years later, and includes the most up-to-date information on the case. Now, me and myself, the reason why I'm reading this book, aside from its an incredibly fascinating event in our history, is that my next novel is going to be based on it. So I'm going to be writing a book on the first fictional book on Cerro Maravilla. There's been a couple of attempts to do books that try to do a fictional spin on the story, but they're not really about the case itself. I'm going to do my attempt at telling this story. But
you'll
my
do well.
My book is going to focus. Oh, thank you. But my book is going to focus on the families of the victims, and also the sole witness of the crime. So it's going to be a little different. But yeah. So I'm doing research, and I'm reading this book. It's an amazing book, and I was, and it's also an event much like War Against All Puerto Ricans, where if you're an academic, or if you're a really active in independence movement, you've heard of these stories. You would have heard of the Nationalist Revolution. You would know about Pedro Albizu Campos. You would know about Sergio Maravilla. But many people who are not in that realm don't know about it. The Sergio Maravilla mm-hmm. murders have largely disappeared from mm-hmm. popular discourse in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And I personally find it really appalling, because I feel like this case was a real turning point for Puerto Ricans, just as much, if not more so, than the Nationalist Revolution, because this was a case that cemented the idea that independentistas are terrorists and they're violent. Even though it was discovered later on that wasn't true, but
it
really cemented that impression. Yeah, they're these violent extremist students, and that the independence movement is not a valid political movement. And it also cemented the idea that being nationalistic as a Puerto Rican, having national pride, is a bad thing. And it really cemented that idea. And, one of the most telling thing, I think, the most telling thing about all of this is that, the police officers were finally convicted in 1987. Mm-hmm. Just 5 years later, because that was in the middle of Rafael Hernandez Colón's administration.
Mm-hmm.
Just 5 years after that, you had Pedro Rosselló get elected. So, this scandal caused one Estadista governor to lose power. He ended up losing an election. And, power going back to the Populares. And then right after this case gets resolved, and during this case, in revealing everything that occurred, it was publicly made knowledge how much the Estadistas hated nationalists, and in many ways hated the Puerto Rican public. They really looked down on them. And, mm-hmm. These police officers, especially Malave, were really, really hateful in their speech toward everyday Puerto Ricans. And even with that being revealed, how corrupt and totalitarian Estadista governments act, another Estadista gets elected within one cycle. Within one cycle, they've completely forgotten what they did. And I think that's just it's indicative not only of a major problem in the Puerto Rican psyche, but I actually think it's indicative of a major problem in the human psyche.
Mm-hmm.
This is something you see in countries around the world, where, one party does something absolutely horrible, and then within a decade, not even a generation, they're back in power.
mm-hmm. Yeah,
And it just
short
seems
memory.
Like we don't learn. Yeah, short memory.
We have short memories.
And... yeah, we do, and it just perpetuates injustice. It really does. So the segment I'm going to read, and I know we kind of talked a little too long, so I know I don't have a whole lot of time. So the section that I'm going to read, it talks a bit about the characters, and the participants in all this, but it's mostly about how and why these students were so angry at the independence movement, particularly the Partido Independentista, and why they felt that they couldn't trust in the electoral process or peaceful protest to actually gain independence.
Okay.
El grupo pensó que la posibilidad de obtener la independencia a través del proceso electoral también se había descartado, particularmente cuando más de la mitad de las familias en la isla recibían asistencia alimentaria por parte del gobierno federal de EUA. Este compraba la voluntad de los pobres al llenar sus estómagos. Marie Bras había sido un tonto por haber participado en las elecciones de 1976. Una nota. Antes de la elección de 76, el Partido Independentista negó la participación electoral.
Mm.
All right. Desde el momento en que se fundó el PSP, Partido Socialista, en 1959 con el nombre de Movimiento Pro Independencia, Marie Bras siempre repudió el proceso electoral de la isla y lo catalogó de charada colonial. ¿Cómo, argumentaba, podían ser honestas las elecciones en una isla rodeada de bases militares a manos del poder imperial? A principios de los 70, sin embargo, trató de formar una alianza con el moderado Pipio, que participaba activamente en las elecciones. Cuando la alianza fue rechazada, convenció al MPI a que se reagorizara como PSP y participara en las elecciones de 1976. Algunos aceptaron eso, la mayor parte de mala gana, pero otros mantuvieron su oposición y abandonaron la organización. Los resultados de las elecciones fueron desastrosos. El partido posteriormente obtuvo solo 9.761 votos, menos del 1% del 1.5 millones de votos en las urnas, y no pudo mantener su acreditación como partido. Lo que molestó a algunos de los miembros del PSP fue que las elecciones expusieron la debilidad numérica del movimiento independentista. El Pipio obtuvo 58.556 votos, que, añadidos a los del PSP, alcanzaron un total de 68.317 votos a favor de la independencia. El argumento independentista de que el sentimiento a favor de la independencia era mucho mayor de lo que indicaba el voto fue recibido con escepticismo antes de 1976 y más adelante con tremenda incredulidad. Los independentistas se sentían igualmente defraudados porque el Partido Nuevo Progresista, que favorecía la estadidad, ganó las elecciones de 1976 con una mayoría de 47.3% del voto total. El poder de los estadistas iba en aumento. Ese había obtenido el 25% del voto en 1956, el doble de lo que obtuvo en 1952. Con un aumento a 32% en 1960, 43% en 68%, y después de 76% parecía estar cerca de lograr una mayoría electoral estadista. Algunos independentistas desilusionados se comenzaron a alejar del PSP y entre ellos estaban los jóvenes reunidos el 4 de julio en el apartamento 1404 del edificio B, del complejo de condominios Quintana. La esposa del Rosado, Ángela, y su hijo, Manuel Lenin, estaban en Ponce de visita con su familia y los jóvenes estaban solos en el apartamento. Soto, que vivía en el apartamento 613 del edificio A, se había ido unos minutos después de que él y Rodríguez García describieron lo que estaba ocurriendo en San Juan. Rosado, quien se desataba fácilmente, se enfurecía cada vez que la estación de radio transmitía los comentarios de los políticos que condenaban la toma del consulado chileno. La mayor parte de los entrevistados eran funcionarios gubernamentales y legisladores que abandonaban la tribuna de la palabra del 4 de julio. Todos eran estadistas. El único que aparentemente elogió el acto en el consulado fue el presidente de la Liga Socialista, Juan Antonio Corregel. Al ser entrevistado en la demostración independentista frente al edificio federal, llamó la toma del consulado un gesto sublime. Tenemos que hacer algo, dijo Rosado. No podemos permitir que esa gente vaya a la cárcel pensando que a nadie le importa un carajo. Tenemos que hacer algo. ¿Qué cosa? Preguntó Rodríguez García. Podríamos atacar a los guardias de seguridad del condominio, sugirió González Malavé. No, eso sería poner en peligro a los guardias, dijo Rosado. Y además nadie va a ver la conexión política. Vamos a asaltar la oficina de la Guardia Universitaria. La oficina de seguridad de la Universidad de Puerto Rico estaba solo a 3 o 4 cuadras de distancia. Cuando todos se pusieron de acuerdo, González Malavé dibujó un diagrama de la área. Estaban sentados en el piso escuchándolo explicar los puntos del mapa cuando Rosado abrió la puerta y dejó entrar a Juan Enrique Escalona. Escalona había conocido a Rosado en 1973, cuando ambos participaron en varias actividades independentistas. Rosado ya vivía solo y Escalona lo visitaba ocasionalmente. Allí conoció a Rodríguez García y reanudó su amistad con González Malavé. Escalona había conocido a González Malavé cuando ambos eran compañeros de clase en la Escuela Intermedia Juan B. Huique en la urbanización Altamesa de Río Piedras. También fueron compañeros en la Escuela Superior Gabriela Mistral de Puerto Nuevo hasta su último año, cuando Escalona comenzó a asistir a la escuela nocturna. González Malavé se había unido a las reuniones del grupo de Rosado en abril o mayo de ese año, y todos le tenían más temor que respeto. Lo consideraban un verdadero revolucionario, mientras que ellos no hacían nada más que vender periódicos, pasar hojas sueltas y participar en demostraciones. González Malavé era un carnet rojo, lo que significaba que contaba con el acceso al nivel más alto del liderato del Partido Socialista Puertorriqueño. Este no era un honor fácilmente logrado o que se tomara a la ligera. Antes de obtenerlo, mantuvo el rango de militante de la Federación de Universitarios Pro Independencia, FUPI, durante el año de la universidad y obtuvo el mismo rango en el PSP. Esto lo convirtió en miembro de un grupo élite de trabajadores dedicados que aceptaban seguir la disciplina del partido, estudiar y diseminar sus dogmas y echarse encima una cantidad considerable de horas cada mes para realizar cualquier labor asignada por el liderato. So it's important to know that González Malavé, you know, so some of these people that's coming into this apartment, because what's happened is that some independentistas took control of the Chilean consulate in San Juan and were arrested fairly quickly. So some of these people that are coming into this apartment and who knew González Malavé going back several years, remembered him as originally being an estadista when he was in high school and a very vocal estadista. And then all of a sudden, pretty much at the end of one school year, he's an estadista, beginning of the next one, he's an independentista. And what it was during that summer, some police officers took him under their wing and convinced him to pretend to be an independentista so he could infiltrate these groups.
Homed him.
So... yeah, so when Sergio Maravilla occurred, some of these people, such as Rosado and... oh, not Rosado. Rosado was one of the victims. But Escalona, Escalona and Rodriguez Garcia, who were the two other people that Malave tried to bring to Sergio Maravilla to kill, both of them remembered him from when he was an Estadista. And when this was, when the murders happened, they remembered it, and they actually felt a whole lot of guilt because they were like, how do we not see who this guy was, really? You know, how did we fall for his trickery? Yeah.
Very interesting book. What give us the name of the book again so that people can really write this stuff down and go purchase the book.
And so in Spanish, it's Dos Linchamientos en el Cerro Maravilla. Los asesinatos policíacos. Yes, Dos Linchamientos.
Okay.
Los asesinatos policíacos en Puerto Rico y el encubrimiento del gobierno federal. That's the title in Spanish. In English,
that's almost as long as our name.
In Cerro Maravilla. I know, right? So in English, it's two lynchings in Cerro Maravilla, the police assassinations of Puerto Rico in Puerto Rico, and the federal government cover-up.
And you can buy both in English and Spanish?
Well, actually, right now, the English version, you can only get used. And it's pretty expensive. The Spanish version is still published by the publisher. And the publisher is the Instituto de Cultura Puertorriqueño. So you can actually buy it directly from El Instituto, as I did.
Can you put that information on the page?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be great if you could put it on both the shows page and the regular Boricuas of the World page.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely, and I think you could see, you know, the frustrations that's voiced in that of these young people feeling like, you know, the party leadership has abandoned them, party leadership's betrayed them. It's the same stuff that we're dealing with now, same exact stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The complaints that they have about the PIP is the same stuff that you hear now. But that was being voiced back in the 1970s. So so clearly, the institutional independence movement in Puerto Rico, which is to say the Partido Independentista, really needs to reinvent itself. I mean, it really does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's lost a couple generations. Of independence activists.
And that's one of the reasons, Jonathan, that when I end my show, I always say, para saber dónde vamos, tenemos que saber de dónde venimos. We can't forget these things. We have to learn about these things and then apply that to what, you know, whatever is happening at that moment of your life, you know, because, you know, unfortunately, you know, Boricuas, we tend to have a short memory about some of these things, you know, and sometimes we grow complacent. And it's time to stop growing complacent, and it's time to start really understanding, you know, all the logistics about what went on and why went on and why we need to change. You know, so mi gente,
yes,
los vamos a dejar porque nos estamos quedando sin tiempo. Pero de todos modos, como siempre, Jonathan on point, va a poner la información en nuestras páginas para que ustedes vayan allá y lo vean. Así que just take a trip to our pages, whichever one you're a member of, and check it out. I will also add Nelson Dennis's article, the address, so that you can read it. And then, of course, you can send it. You don't even have to send it just to Congressman, ¿cómo se llama? Dios mío, qué malo.
Gutierrez.
You can also send it to the others, you know? You know, you can send it to Serrano here in New York. Serrano, who in essence has said that, hey, you know, maybe it's a good thing for this junta to happen. The same with Nidia Velázquez, which really annoyed the heck out of me also. So you can send that to them as well so that they can see that the people are worried and the people want something different, not just, you know, the status quo, whatever Congress decides. No, it's what we decide because it's our country. Mi gente, por favor, ¿ok?
Uh-huh.
Los vamos a dejar con un poquito de música como siempre, pero de todos modos, como dije más temprano, para saber dónde vamos, tenemos que saber de dónde venimos. Que Dios me los bendiga a todos, que la pasen bien. Jonathan, muchas gracias, mi hermanito. I appreciate it. You don't know how much. Ahí hablamos entonces. hablamos entonces para el próximo libro y claramente en el teléfono, que from time to time we get to talk. Los dejamos con un numerito más chévere en el Calapa, que bailen un poquito porque es viernes. Catalina la O. Que la pasen bien, mi gente.